I wanna know what you're thinking. There are some things you can't hide. I wanna know what you're feeling. Tell me what's on your mind.
This is Sun Talk. I'm Rich Kirshner, your host. Our special guest today is legendary actor, voice, and broadcaster Pat McMahon. Pat, does this conversation find you in good health?
Well, yes, in as good health as one could have when he's introduced by that legendary, which is Latin for geezer. I don't know whether you've ever heard that, Rich, but...
I have not.
But I'm in absolutely fantastic shape, considering the fact that people are saying right now, listening on Sun Sounds, my God, is he still alive?
Right. You said, can we deviate? Now I'm going to deviate a little bit. What did you do for Sun Sounds in the past?
I've always just admired the service. And some time ago, a number of years ago, I was in the company of someone who was involved with the management end of Sun Sounds, whatever capacity that is. And I asked if I could volunteer. And as I recall, a long time ago, I think Ben Franklin asked me to read excerpts from the Saturday Evening Post or something. I do. I think that there were magazine articles or something that I read. What a great service, and what a delight it is being part of it today.
You're an Irishman, and I'm a German. That could make for a volatile or amusing conversation. We should be taking this at a pub.
I would imagine that probably, rather than any of the negatives, I think it would mean an enormous amount of profit for the neighborhood pub that either one of us or both showed up.
All right, let's start off with how you got into the entertainment business. When we last spoke, you shared of your childhood experiences that influenced you.
Well, I am almost embarrassed when I tell particularly young aspiring performers how I got into the business, because it's not the easiest thing for people to do. There are far more entertainers than there are venues for entertainment, or people who want to be entertained by them. And in my case, it was a whole lot easier to begin a career, at least consider a career, in the world of communications and entertainment, because I was born into it. I was born into an entertainment family in the days of vaudeville. And for those who aren't familiar with that term, vaudeville was a category of performance on the road. Nobody had an opportunity to stay in one community and do their act, because it was a matter of, in the early days, being on a train and performing at all of the theaters in one circuit, one ownership of the theaters, like the Orpheum circuits, the Paramount, the Hippodromes. Those were all owned privately across the country. And magic acts, animal acts, dance acts, musicians would go from one city and one theater to the next, after train travel became impractical, and that was before my time. People would normally go on tours by automobile and would drive from city to city. We'd usually would perform for a week or two in theaters that would be vaudeville houses in virtually every city of any size at all. And you would see this variety of performance, and usually a movie, a cartoon, and a travelogue, or a newsreel, when that was how we got our news information.
Oh, yeah.
My parents did a dance act, a variety dance act. Always seemed to be in demand, always on the road. And Rich, let me add this. I told you that from the time I was born into this business. Well, my parents were on a South American tour, and my mom said to my father, "You know, Jack, my wardrobe is getting a little snug. I'm changing sizes." And since she was a very athletic and responsible person about her diet, she knew it must have been something like me. And it was. And she said, "Well, let's go back to the United States. Let's go back to my hometown so that Pat can be born there." And so instead of Rio de Janeiro or Buenos Aires or any of the great cities of the United States, my mom decided to have me in her hometown in Kansas, which wouldn't have been too bad if it was Wichita or Kansas City, but it was Leavenworth.
Kansas. Oh, no.
Yes, that's the prison capital of the United States.
Yeah, and that also strikes fear in the hearts of every military personnel in the world.
Right, because, of course, of the huge officer training facility.
And the prison.
But the prisons, of course, were the facilities that most people associate Leavenworth with. So every time I ever mentioned growing up that I was born in Leavenworth, Kansas, I would get lines like, "Oh, was your mom doing time?"
Oh, no. Right.
Or with the sense of humor that most people have when they don't know how to do it, did you have a number or a name when you were born? Well, I was 5 weeks there after being born at St. Joseph's Hospital, and then we all said, "Let's get out of this place." And went back on the road and remained a touring child of performers, being homeschooled during that entire period of time, till finally my parents said, "No, you really ought to have some kind of a classroom experience," and then sent me to a Catholic boys' school in Des Moines, Iowa. But I got out of Leavenworth, Rich.
Well, there's a lot of people that probably would like to have said that.
My time in Leavenworth was only 5 weeks.
That's good. That beats what a lot of people. And you didn't have to make little rocks out of big rocks and make them back into big rocks, right? You and I were fellow Air National Guardsmen. How did your stint in the Guard influence or enhance your eventual career?
Well, mine, much like my childhood, was a little different than most of the Guardsmen. I know that, Rich, that was the extent of the service that you were called to perform. I got drafted when we still had that. I got drafted. I was in, after college, I was in radio and some television in the Quad Cities in Davenport, Iowa, which is right on the Mississippi River, across from Rock Island, Illinois. Great Midwestern folks. And so I started my broadcast career there, and was drafted, and was extraordinarily fortunate. And you, as a guy who's had military experience, know that you rarely ever get a chance to be involved in your career field once you're in the military. Usually it's something totally removed from what you do for a living.
Right.
And I wound up in the Army in a traveling entertainment group, right? The worst thing that could have happened to me, the worst injury that I could have had occur in my military life would be falling off my tap shoes. We traveled, we rehearsed in Colorado Springs, also a great place to be. We rehearsed in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and then would take it on the road as a public relations unit for the military, for the Army, the Missile Command. And we went across the country, traveled very comfortably. Sometimes we lived on bases, sometimes in hotels, and entertained both military and civilian groups. I did that for 2 years, came to Phoenix because it sounded like a good idea in May. What a great period of time for the weather. I was going to stay a couple of weeks and then just take off and follow my fortune. But I fell in love with Phoenix, and I still had a military obligation in the reserves. You still have that for a year or two. And I thought, well, you know what? How about if I try this Air Force unit, the Air Guard, out at Sky Harbor Airport, because a lot of the guys that I got acquainted with in broadcasting here were involved in the press end of Air Guard activity. And you created the newspaper for the Air Guard headquarters when you met once a month. And that's what I did, thinking how lucky I am, only 1 weekend a month. Oh, wait a minute, hold it. What is this message I'm getting from Washington? Your Air Guard unit has been activated, and you are now full-time in the Air Force and being sent to Europe because of the Berlin crisis. And I thought, did they really need me that much to protect our country from the Huns?
Right.
But I got sent to France, and in a long answer to your question, I was over there, and they decided that militarily, I probably was not what they were looking for the front lines, and I became the airman in charge of the service club. So I would pass out ping pong paddles and pool cues. Not bad.
No, that's not bad duty, but it's not what you wanted to do.
Well, no, but the theater was also a part of the service club, as long as we're going to pursue this.
Right.
The theater with the stage and large audience area was a part of the service club. I was responsible for that too. So, Rich, I was responsible for bringing performers in from across Europe. Once again, the same thing that I grew up with, jugglers and dancers and singers. And so I was still involved with showbiz. And I must have done something right when I was saying my prayers as that little Catholic kid.
As you should. We're speaking with Pat McMahon. How did your radio career start up, and what were your assignments?
Well, it started off very badly because I had noticed when I was in college, I had noticed on the board that shows employment opportunities for students, and it said traffic director, KSTT, downtown Davenport. And I thought, well, wow, I don't need any experience to say in the middle of the afternoon, you know, it's drive time, I'm out of class. All I have to do is go stand outside on the sidewalk with a microphone, because we didn't do helicopters and fancy things like that at that time. And stand outside and say, well, there's a Buick holding up things on Oak Avenue. Well, I found out when I got to the radio station that traffic in radio had to do with getting the commercials to the guy on the air. I had nothing to do with getting people to work and back home on time. It was not that kind of traffic.
Interesting.
After I interviewed, however, I got a call at the campus a few weeks later, and they said, whatever it was that I did, said, and interviewed with, impressed them enough, at least as a loquacious, heavily verbalized Irish guy, that I might be a disc jockey. And I was. They invited me to do a show, and that was the answer to the question how I got into radio. They invited me, I accepted, and the rest turned out to be at least my history, Rich.
Okay, Pat, we're going to have to jump into this one. The Wallace and Ladmo Show. How did you get the opportunity to perform?
You can jump into Wallace and Ladmo anytime you want to, because I've never had a job that was really work. I never had a job that I didn't like or that I dreaded going to. I've been so fortunate that everything I've ever done, I've really enjoyed, and I enjoyed the people that I worked with. Just incredibly lucky, because those things just kind of happen by themselves. But this one I fell into, as you said, jumped into. I didn't find myself responsible in any way other than admiring the show from the day I came to town. I had rented a house here for a short period of time. Turned the television set on. When I walked in the door for the first time, turned the television set on, and it sounds like a fairy tale, but Rich, I'm telling you, it's the God's truth. I walked in, turned it on, and there was a kid's show called It's Wallace at that time.
Oh, okay.
And here's two guys in costume. And I said, oh, no, not one of those sappy kid shows. I hate these things. They're so dumb, and there's not any element of entertainment, because they usually just grabbed a guy in the hallway, put a sailor hat on him, and said, go introduce the cartoons. That's it. That's the only talent you ever used to have. And the guy would always say yes, because he could make an extra $25. I thought, why would there be one of these local kid shows on the moment I'm introduced to Phoenix Television? Except I began listening to the conversation that was going on between Wallace and Ladmo. And it was about the fact that the sales department at Channel 5 was complaining that they had to stop ad-libbing the commercials because they weren't showing enough respect for the clients. And I said, wait a minute, hold it. This is something different. You're talking about sales and no respect for the client. What's going on with these two guys? This is funny stuff. And I became totally involved with the off-the-wall satirical approach that they took and the incredible respect that they had for the kids in the audience, never talking down to them. And so I watched every day, and I decided that I liked Phoenix so much that I would give it a try and drop my resume off at a number of the stations here. Channel 5 had an opening in the news department that I didn't know about, and newsman during the day sounded great to me. I'll spend, 6 months, a year in Phoenix, and then I'm off to pursue my fortune. Well, I went into Channel 5 and immediately looked up Wallace Ladmo, introduced myself. We hit it off, became close friends. And then during the afternoon, many times when I was supposed to be putting the news together, I'd be down in the studio watching in the audience the Wallace and Ladmo show. And one day Wallace, during a cartoon, came over to me and he said, I have inadvertently written a comedy bit for three guys, and there's only two of us. Pat, would you help us out? And I helped him out for 30 years. Wow. And every moment was an absolute joy. And I say every moment because the three of us, Rich, had virtually nothing in common by way of our backgrounds, general tastes in food, and where we lived. But we never, ever had arguments about anything. Oh, we would discuss politics and disagree dramatically about everything in that area. But when it came to the show, there was only one thing that was important, and that is it funny? And we always agreed on what was funny.
Well, did you have any input as to the characters, costumes, and script? Have some fun with this one.
Yeah, it was a show that collaborated because of our trust in one another. Not so much the friendship, because that didn't get in the way. It was the collaboration, the respect for the understanding that each of us had how to appeal to that audience. You don't talk down to the kids. And there are funny things about everything in life. And in good taste, let's find the funny things about what happened today in the newspaper, or what happened yesterday on television, or what happened during this period of time that we all share, maybe a holiday time. But there's always something funny. Captain Super, for example.
the shoulder pads were always a nice touch.
Well, Captain Super, one of dozens and dozens of characters that I played. Wallace was the straight man. This is for people who just got it. Wallace was the straight man. Ladmo was the kind of goofy, lovable doofus that was everybody's friend and everybody loved. And I was everybody else. I was the rotten, wealthy, braggadocio society kid.
Gerald.
Gerald. And Aunt Maud, the lady, the elderly woman who lived in a retirement community.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing now because this is
great.
It's all true. It's all
right.
True.
Aunt Maud, right. Well, her storybook was very dark and really spooky. And Marshall Good, the cowboy, but he was a cowboy. He was always out of work and borrowing money from everybody, and on and on and on. But Captain Super, I think, was the perfect example of our approach to things. Instead of a comic book hero, there was nothing heroic about this guy. There was nothing super. No, this was more, it was more the guy in professional wrestling who always promised about the great things that he was going to do and never quite got around to doing it, which to kids, that is, wait a minute, here's a guy in the red spandex outfit with the cape and the mask, but the guy that just was always the blowhard. Wait a minute, hold it. The kids are saying, that's like Uncle Willie. That's like Uncle Willie comes over to the house in the holidays and says, okay, I brought a 20 as a Christmas present for each one of you. Oh, I left my wallet back in my house.
Oh, geez.
I'll catch you next time. It's that guy. It's the politician that your parents voted for and regretted. It's that guy that always makes the big promises back in the office every day that you work with and somehow never quite delivers. In fact, Captain Super would occasionally say, okay, you doubt my strength, my prowess. I am going to come in tomorrow with a phone book, and I'm going to tear it in half with my bare hands. And so all the expectations, finally, he's going to do something other than talk about it. And the next day he did bring in a phone book, the Heber phone book.
Oh, no.
With one yellow page.
Yeah, so it was thin.
And then had a difficult time actually getting it started. So that gives at least our audience today, who might not have been here over the 36 years that the show was on. They were on 6 years, Rich, before I ever showed up.
Wow.
And then I should remind you and everybody else right now that the show was off for 32 years. Well, usually in my business in broadcasting, after 32 days, nobody remembers you were even there if you were gone. Once you left, there's always somebody to take your place. Well, the show was off the air for 32 years, and Channel 7 here in Phoenix decided to put on a half an hour of comedy bits, The Return of Wallace and Radmo. And we were on opposite NFL playoffs, and we wiped out everybody. In fact, the only program with all of the channels we have, only program that beat this half hour on Sunday was NFL football, and then only barely. It was amazing the kind of success that they had. And at the end of every show, I would say, I was hosting the show, I would say, okay, if anybody wants to win a Landmo bag, which is the prize of all time.
Oh, that is, I never got one, but anyway, go ahead.
No, I never got a Landmo bag. It's actually on a t-shirt now. I never got a Landmo bag, the picture of a Landmo bag. And then under that it says, and I'm in therapy in my 17th year or something like that. The Landmo bag was a grocery bag filled with Hostess cupcakes and animal crackers and that kind of stuff. And everybody wanted one, and they still do. But if you, at the end of the rerun show, The Return of Wallace and Landmo, I say, if you want a Landmo bag, just send your name in to Channel 7, and one winner will be chosen every week. Now get this. 18,000.
Oh my.
600 names, individual names, individual winners. By the time the 18 weeks of Wallace and Landmo were wrapping up, so they're going to do it again this coming fall.
Oh, that is the ultimate gift of all of time, to get a Landmo bag.
Rich, you'll finally have a chance again. And getting one, you have to win one. You can't buy one. And even your buddy Pat, being invited to do an hour of conversation with you, I still can't give it to you as a friend giving a friend a present. That's against the rules.
We're speaking with Pat McMahon. How are you passing the time these days? I know, I've heard that you've had a heck of a schedule going on, but go ahead, elaborate.
Excuse me for laughing.
your turn.
Well, no, I know that a lot of guys that have been around as long as I have long since retired, but I've never been able to figure out retired to what that would be more fun than what I do. After and during Wallace and Landmo, I was the program director of a very successful pop music radio station here in Phoenix, Kriz.
Yeah.
Then I did the talk radio for 30 years at KTAR. You know, if you put these things back to back, they actually existed simultaneously in
right.
the same period of time in parallel. But if you put them back to back, I'm 376 years old. But I'm having such a terrific time.
You look pretty good for 376.
But I have 30 years at KTAR every day, Monday through Friday, doing morning talk. and a variety of television talk shows, including Channel 7 AZTV for now 20 years. I'm just not one of those guys that has a flaky reputation of moving rapidly from one place to another. I'm pretty much dependably stuck in one location for quite a while, and I like it that way. It's one of the reasons why I decided to stay in Phoenix instead of going anywhere else. Where is it that I would enjoy life, raise my children in this environment, and have a better time? So, yeah, talk radio, Channel 7, the morning show, the Daily Mix, the God Show, which carried over after 20 years on Sundays at KTAR, and now on the Star Worldwide Network. You've been around for a while. You may remember the name Dave Pratt.
I do.
Yeah, Dave, big disc jockey here, and created an internet radio and television station, and the God Show is on every week there and on Google constantly. The show, not about religion, but about spirituality, and a service like The Sun Sounds has a spiritual capacity to it, and how it educates and moves the audience into arenas that might not be available to them. So it's a whole infinite variety of subjects there. And I neglected to tell you that since you asked how I'm filling my time, besides radio and television, ever since the 70s, I've had a creative company called the Idea Factory. We work with clients on image, advertising, not the placement of spots, but the creation of the commercials themselves, and all the creative elements that go into hopefully making a business successful. So is that busy enough for you, Rich?
I think so. My goodness. I when you and I were arranging this pleasant conversation, you were having to refer to your calendar and get back to me. So that tells me one thing. How long were you at KPHO, Channel 5?
Let me see. From 1960
oh my,
to the end of the Wallace Show, almost 30 years.
Wow.
Yeah. The end of the Wallace Show, live, that is, was 89. So that period of time. And you know what? I never even told you, I guess just it's humility, that prevented me from remembering, along with all of that, one of the characters on the Wallace and Landmo show that took me in a different direction altogether. And I'm only mentioning it because elements of your audience that are old enough would remember the rock and roll character that we created called Hubcap, H-U-B, first name, K-A-P-P, his last name, Hubcap and the Wheels. And I don't know whether you were around in the 60s, but when Wallace saw the success of the Beatles and saying, these guys are so much more than show business, they're all over the place. They're in the news constantly. We ought to have a rock and roll character, which would necessarily be a satirical look at rock performers. So we created this character with a James Brown, huge black pompadour and heavy eyebrows and mink eyelashes. This was before the group Kiss with makeup and those kinds of characters. This was before glam rock. And so all we did was create it like Gerald, Captain Super, and Aunt Maud, except we made a record for fun, just a goofy record locally. It became number one, beat the Beatles out of the number one position on the charts.
I think I remember that record.
Work works a dirty word, the dirtiest word I've ever heard. Unemployed, won't you hear my plea? Don't say that dirty word to me. So we thought, okay, well, that's probably what Hub would do, right? Except it became number one. We said, what is this? Well, Capitol Records, for whom the Beatles recorded at that time, Capitol Tower in Hollywood, said, wait a minute, guys, at a staff meeting, what is this of the Phoenix charts? What's a hubcap? How could they beat the Beatles? The Beatles are always going to be number one.
Wow.
What's going on over there? Go over in Phoenix and see what this hubcap thing is all about. So they sent a guy over, came to one of our concerts, and Rich, oh, the place was filled and it was insane, because Phoenix was in on the joke, and the kids loved the idea that they had a rock and roll guy of their own. They didn't care that it was for laughs. And the place was crazy and packed and insane. And the guy came back with a contract backstage, signed us to a contract to Capitol Records. We wound up in Hollywood trying to get back for the Wallace and Landmo show too, commuting back and forth, which was a problem. But we did the Steve Allen shows, late night television shows like Tonight and the Joey Bishop show. And it was another crazy part of the Wallace and Landmo legacy.
It's a heck of an experience, if I could say it that way.
Oh, it was great fun. I mean, everybody should be a rock and roll star for about 45 minutes. We had the best of it, but we missed doing the Wallace and Landmo show, because when we were over there, we couldn't come back. And then we would commute, and we would be leaving the guys here without all those characters, you know? So the show was different without Gerald and Captain Super and the Wizard and all the rest of them. And the band and I finally said, okay, what do you want to do? Do you want to be hubcap playing the Conestoga County Fair when you're 45 years old? Or do you want to do the Wallace and Landmo show? Mm-hmm. And it was an absolute vote without any question at all. We had a really good time, but when you compare the two, there was even a play written about that era in the Wallace and Landmo show, and it still is staged every couple of years here at the Herberger or one of the big theatrical houses in town. And all the characters are there, Wallace and Landmo, actors, of course, playing us. But it was all about when Hubcap became a star in Hollywood and said, okay, that's enough. Let's go back home.
That's cool. Okay, I do have to re-ask, did you have any influence on the characters and or costumes that
you... Oh, yeah, you asked that before. And I'm sorry, I neglected to respond to that.
Oh, not at all, not at all.
Oh, I told you, no, I remember telling you it was a collaboration. But nobody got more than one vote or anything like that. Wallace was the producer of the show. And we would almost always agree totally on what the character, how the character would develop and why it was on the show. Mostly why we needed it and it didn't duplicate somebody else's work. We would all have input into the material itself. We ad-libbed an awful lot of the material because, well, we were good at it. When you have people who can do improv work like that, and you have people that work together that well. Because the key, Rich, to improvisational comedy is listening. It's not first what you say, it's what you hear, so that you're responding to the party that you're working with. And so we would always go into every bit with the character who today is going to be doing this because of this, and this is how he feels about it.
Well, it's almost like Harvey Korman and Tim Conway.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. You have a plot line, a premise, because you don't want to go in shabbily, not really knowing what you're doing. So you'd have a premise, and why they're here, why they knocked on the door, why they're guesting that day. And sometimes Wallace would start it off with a question. Sometimes the character would come in with some cause of some kind. And then sometimes the whole bit was written if it called for that kind of thing, and it would be prompted. Usually we would drive the prompter operator crazy because we'd be ad-libbing in between lines. And then as far as costumes, you asked a great question, costumes. That was pretty much left up to me. If it was my character, it was pretty much whatever it is that I thought they would sound like, mannerisms, and what the costume would be. If it was a time machine bit, and again, we had our own time machine, Wallace would get into the time machine and come out in another year to talk to a historic person, and needless to say, destroy the whole concept of historic reality. if it was a historic figure that would be in the time machine or in a time machine bit, Wallace, as the historian that he was about every period of time in world history, he would usually have the costume ready. But if we created something, it would usually be mine.
Okay. Well,
those are good questions, Rich. You ought to do this for a living.
Just as a volunteer. But hey, I like I told you before, I try to be creative with questions. And when I spoke with Gene Kranz, the flight director of Apollo 13, he kept saying that's an interesting question. So I consider that a compliment.
You bet. You bet. And because I do so many interview shows, it's the highest praise indeed.
When
a guest stops for a moment having to think about the answer, particularly those that have been asked over and over and over again, people who have had to go through that same kind of consistency in interview work, and they politely try to make it sound as if they've never heard that before. But when they honestly have to stop and think, or they say, as you said, hey, that's a good question. That's applause. I don't know whether anybody who's listening right now is particularly interested, but you can always get in touch with me at Channel 7 AZTV. And since you were in the service of our country in the Air Force, I know that you're clever enough to look up the address.
I can do that, and that is your preference, as opposed to sending it to KTAR.
Yeah, right. No, I'm at Channel 7, and there are people there who kind of take care of me in so many different capacities, including mail and that kind of thing. Do we have a minute left?
Oh, absolutely. I have that last question that I haven't asked you yet.
Okay, so. Well, no, I just wanted to tell you, you just stimulated my mind once again thinking about people who send lovely, lovely notes to Channel 7. I'm talking to the audience now. Please don't think that because somebody has been on the air for eons and millennia and decades and decades and decades, that we're indifferent. I can't speak for anybody else, but the vast majority of people love hearing from you. And not just compliments, they love hearing suggestions how we can do it better, somebody you'd like to hear us interview, any of those things are terrific. But do you know that every once in a while, an amazing frequency, as a matter of fact, I get emails and handwritten letters at Channel 7 from grandmothers and grandfathers who watched the Wallace and Ladmo show, and they send me a picture of their grandson or granddaughter, little kids, watching the show, the rerun that I was talking about before, mm-hmm. watching the show and laughing. Sometimes they bring them down to the station, and I get a chance to meet generations of people. Well, that's almost unheard of in this business, and what a thrill it is. So, but for our audience, if they want to send me a note, it doesn't even have to be flattering. You can tell me that this was a huge, boring hour, if you want to, and that Rich was the only part of it that you liked. But I'm delighted to hear from you. And the best thing to do is Channel 7, AZTV, 44th and Camelback. Okay, now it's back to you, Rich.
Okay, Pat. Excuse me, I have to clear my throat. I have to get my award-winning voice back. As you,
you sounded like Cronkite to me. who, by the way, was one of my favorite interviews. I mean, of all of the celebrated media people and movie people and recording artists and politicians that I've had the pleasure of interviewing, how fortunate I was to keep company with those people, even if it was just for an hour. But Cronkite was one of the classiest ever. The newsmen at KTAR actually brought his book with them for him to autograph, and most of the time they're kind of blasé. But at the end of an hour, he looked at my producer, Rosemary, and said, "Was that okay?" After all of those incredible years as America's most trusted news person, he genuinely wanted to know, was it what you wanted? Was this okay? Not great.
Do you remember the NBC TV news reporter, Roy Neal?
Yes. I never talked to him, never interviewed him, but I sure remember him being on, yeah.
I interviewed him 3 times, and they were incredible interviews. He was fantastic. And he's got a voice for radio. I'm not saying he's ugly, but the dude had some voice. He really
no,
did.
No, I know, I remember. Basso Profundo.
Yeah. Jeez. He was the best. Oh, okay, and before I get the last question in for you, did you ever meet or do you know Larry Martell?
Well, sure. Didn't we work together?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking you. A friend of mine from high school, he did some internship and spent time with Larry Martell. I just thought that I would ask you.
Well, Larry was at Channel 5, I think.
Yes, I believe so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's when we worked together. Absolutely. I'm glad you didn't pull one of those names out of the blue that I didn't remember, because I always feel bad if I don't. But after all these years, there's been so many. And, you know, sometimes you can't remember everybody. But I don't remember anybody I didn't like. That's the truth. I don't remember anybody that I worked with that I didn't like. Or guests. There were guests that were lousy interviews. There were guests that were inspiring, like Mother Teresa, there were guests that I didn't want the interview to end because they were so compelling. But the people that you were with every day, I don't remember one that I recall negatively. How lucky that is.
No, that's good. That's good. That's important because you have to enjoy what you're doing and keep your own personal influence energized, if I will.
Listen, I enjoyed this interview, and I'm doing it for free.
Yeah, that's the important. So am I. We're in the same boat here. Okay. Before the last question, I know you're just sitting there, what the heck are you going to ask me?
Okay, here we go. Drum roll. Last question.
Last question for you. Now, everyone that I've asked this, they usually laugh at first, and then they answer. It's a two-parter. We're speaking with Pat McMahon. The last question for you, Pat. What's your favorite food, and what do you want for Christmas?
I'm really sorry that you prefaced it, Rich, with this is the last question. Because when you're my age, you don't want to hear anybody say, this is the last
right, anything. Right. I agree.
My favorite food, and I'm really a foodie. So I'm talking about loving the fact that I've had the opportunity to travel as much as I have and dining on dishes of the world. I might have a difficult time narrowing it down because there's nothing that I don't like except oysters, and that's because I'm allergic to them. Everything else is fair game, including game. But if I have to narrow down one dish that I would always order first off any menu, it would be lobster. Steamed lobster, lobster stew, lobster in anything, in or out of the shell. When God decided to create the perfect seafood, it was lobster. When he decided to create other things at the top of the list of A's, it would be avocados and artichokes. Does that answer your question?
Oh, the last two you just said, I don't dig. I don't like avocados, and I don't. I was a bag boy at Smitty's back in the 80s, and artichokes hurt because they got those little stickers on the cloves.
Which is one of the reasons, Rich, that I'm not inviting you to dinner.
Okay, fair enough.
And what's the second part again?
What do you want for Christmas?
Oh, this is going to be my... I'm giving you my spontaneous response, and yes, it's corny, but it's health for my family. I've had such extraordinary good fortune when it comes to my health. And my wife, Duffy, also did up until about a year and a half ago, and then came down with a balance problem. She uses a walker now and is still a million laughs and a great companion. But she's had a difficult transition in their life because she was a 150-mile-an-hour person, and now she can't drive. So she's stuck with me in the house all the time.
Oh, boy. Well, okay, who's that worse for, you or her?
Oh, well, I'm delighted, but I get to go. I get to jump in the car and go places, and she can't. But I really do mean that for Christmas and all the Christmases that we have yet to come together, I would love to know that Duffy will be better and I will continue to be well, and I will only be at perfect health if I'm always welcome on Sun Sounds.
Well, I'll share this with you very quickly. Your answer was somewhat humble. Of astronauts that I interviewed, I always ask them the same questions. They said what they want for Christmas is peace on Earth because they've seen the world from space, and there's no political borders like on a globe. You just look at that. That's the only place we can live. And why can't we all get along?
Most of us do, Rich. When you look at the globe, either in your library, the globe that you may have simply standing as a piece of furniture, or you look at the pictures that the astronauts have sent us, or if you're fortunate enough to be one of those rare, blessed individuals that I've also gotten a chance to interview over the years, and you hear that they actually saw the sphere that is that blue marble in the universe of space. I also, maybe because I'm an Irish optimist, I recognize the reality that, yes, there are hot spots and always have been. Since pre-biblical times, since the beginning of mankind through yesterday, there have always been hot spots. There have always been leaders that chose to lead through bloodshed, but far fewer of them than populations of good people living good, unselfish lives in the interests of that planet. And if we simply take a look at all of the extraordinary positive things that are going on all the time, every day, it's easy to neutralize the fact that there's violence here, there's racism there, and there are those negatives. It's the weakness that happens in that creature called humankind. But to me, there's no question in my mind that the balance is always going to be far more positive than negative.
Well, that's very well thought out and spoken. I didn't know you were so cerebral.
I'm an Irishman.
Yeah, okay. Whatever.
Hey, well, listen, let me leave it with this. You want to hear nauseating levels of Irish. And by the way, I love Germany because I was there after the Troubles, but I was in Germany in cities like Berlin and Munich. I don't know what part you came from, but it's an extraordinary society. If we're talking about Germany, a lot of people think in terms of warring governments. I think in terms of Beethoven. But from Ireland, listen, this is John Patrick Michael McMahon saying so long to the Sun Sound audience on behalf of my wife, Duffy McMahon, and my oldest son who went to Notre Dame.
Well, Pat, it's been a great time hearing your memories from Germany. Sehr gut gemacht. From the Air Force, aim high. From Sun Sounds, Godspeed in all of your endeavors.
Thank you, Rich.
An interview with Pat McMahon. This is Rich Kirshner, your host on Sun Talk.